Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 8:10 here at WCCO. Welcome back to Center Stage. Oh, did I say Center Stage? That's next hour. One of my favorite hours.
Eastern Standard Time.
And guess what? In the second half of that hour at 9:35, we're going to have the cast of Crowns come in studio.
I saw that.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited for you.
If you have not seen that show, just wait till we talk about it. You guys stay tuned for Center Stage. It's just going to be wonderful. It is now 8:10, and here at WCCO, we are talking about a lot of things like neighbor from hell. Have you heard about this? I mean, we've talked about this years ago in the 20 years that I've been here. But honestly, have you ever had one? Have you ever had a neighbor from hell? And how quickly did you know you had it? Was it obvious the day you moved in? Was it all the neighbors were coming by except for one and then you heard about it? How did that work out for you? Well, let me tell you something. Neighbors from hell are all over the place. I don't care if you're in a rich neighborhood, poor neighborhood, white, black, Hispanic neighborhood, doesn't matter. Sometimes people just end up moving from a dream home because of a bad neighbor. I am not kidding you. They walk away because of a bad neighbor. What are property owner rights when it comes to neighbors, and how can they navigate through a bad situation? I have so many questions about this, and MJ Bauer is in studio with us tonight to talk about it. Who is MJ? MJ is the executive director of the Conflict Resolution Center in Minneapolis. Welcome to CCO, MJ.
Hi, Geraldine. Thanks.
Hey, now. I'm so glad you were able to come in studio. I have it down here that you're a phoner, so I'm really happy to see you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's jump into this because I want to know, first of all, tell us a little bit about Conflict Resolution Center.
Well, we're a community mediation organization in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. and we provide mediations really to almost anyone for almost anything based on their ability to pay. So we do mediations for neighbors. We do mediations for youth. We do mediations in courts. We do mediations for parents around parenting time. We do mediations for the police department. We do mediations for Hennepin County. We do all kinds of mediations.
I always thought that mediations were the easier way out, right? If you, like, say if it was a divorce, the people that use mediators for a divorce sometimes because they get along so well.
Right.
And they don't have any problem with that. They can easily negotiate and it'll be done. So when you say mediate for, you know, a neighbor from hell, I'm mm-hmm. thinking, why would I go with mediation?
Well, you know, one of the things we like to say is anytime there's going to be an ongoing relationship, mm-hmm. so you're going to have to see that person. I mean, unless one of you moves, you're going to have to see that person frequently. So if you have a conflict with somebody that you're going to have an ongoing relationship with, to enter into a mediation to try to get that conflict resolved is a pretty smart thing to do.
So what are some of the telltale signs of a neighbor from hell? Like people who go to see homes now, they don't just go to the home and go inside. They peruse the neighborhood. They want to make sure they see who's outside playing. Is it clean 4 blocks from now or a 4-block radius? You know, what are the people like that are walking their dogs? So people really spend a lot of time in those neighborhoods where they're thinking about purchasing. So what are the telltale signs we should look for?
You know, there are all kinds of things that can cause neighbors to be in conflict. It can be unsightly trash. It can be dogs and dog poop. It can be kids that maybe are running around. It can be unkept property. But usually it's about more than the thing. It, you know, we like to say it's never about what it's about. You know, at the end of the day, it's usually about mutual respect or treating people and other people's property the way that you would like to have your property treated. So I don't know. I don't know if a walk around a neighborhood is going to tell you if you're going to get the neighbor from hell. You may be the neighbor from hell.
Right, right. So if that's the case, then let's look at it from a different lens. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the neighborhood and I know that I need to get to know my neighbors, because you start those relationships and that's what can blossom, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But if you can't start, if you're having a hard time starting a relationship or starting even a conversation, is that one of the signs that says, oh, things might not go so well because you're clashing, you're not getting along immediately?
You know, I think there's a tendency these days, especially in the suburbs, we drive our cars home and open up the garage door and go into the garage, and we don't get to know our neighbors very well. I mean, I grew up in Minneapolis, in South Minneapolis, where we used to do block parties, and, yeah. you know, you'd get to know your neighbors, and I don't know if that's so much the case anymore. And I also think that as neighbors are maybe less homogenous as they used to be, there can be conflict because people don't understand other cultural norms mm-hmm. or practices. So they end up being suspicious rather than open. So I think just a general openness to the people in your neighborhood and a willingness to be curious rather than to be suspicious, with an open mind, can help a lot.
Well, that's one of the challenges, is that the cultural norms from neighborhood to neighborhood is ever changing. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have three people move into the neighborhood. I've seen neighborhoods where three homes are up for sale.
Yep.
And depending on who those three that move in, they could change the culture of the neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Right? So trying to prepare. I remember when I moved into Como Park with my second home, and there was a knock on the door, and they had a package that was sent to me that had a map of the neighborhood, where the best pharmacy is, the best grocery store, how far it was, that sort of thing. And it had a list of things that are expected of you, which really surprised me, right? Mm-hmm. It had things like, you know, we would appreciate it if, you know, everyone in the neighborhood is asked to take good care of their property, to pick up the trash, to make sure if you see children in the neighborhood that are wandering off, don't hesitate to call the person that's in charge of the block party. I mean, the block club, that sort of thing. I have never received a package like that, but I appreciate it. It came with coupons for the cleaners, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so for me, it was a great gift to receive. I felt like I knew a little bit more about the community I was moving into. Many people don't care about that in certain communities. Like you said, from one area to another, it's ever changing. So if we have laws that deal with it overall, just kind of a blanket area, is it enough, or do we need to hone in on the laws a little closer in order to have this conflict come to a resolution?
You know, I think most of the things that prompt neighbor disputes are generally not dealt with in the law. It's about a tree that drops leaves on your driveway. It's about a car that's parked in front of your house in a way that makes it hard for you to get in and out of your driveway. It's about maybe noise being a little bit louder, or cooking smells or pot smells coming across the way. It isn't always about something that can be dealt with the law, which is why mediation is such a good thing to think about doing with neighbor disputes, because it opens up a dialogue so people can have a conversation about what it is that's bothering them, about what's going on, because it's usually not about a broken law. It's usually about a difference of an opinion or a conflict about some misconception or miscommunication about what's going on with a neighbor.
Has urban sprawl caused given conflict resolution a challenge?
You know, I think that in some ways, higher density living is harder because you're closer to your neighbors and you're maybe more aware, visually aware, and it sort of you can see it and smell it and feel it. Houses that are farther apart, maybe there's less compact density, but there's also a little bit more distance. Like I said before, it's easy to, you know, pull up into the driveway and the garage and go into have your car go in, and you never see your neighbors anymore. I thought that was an interesting example that you gave about what you received when you moved into the Como Park neighborhood. I might characterize it a little differently, and that would be going out to meet the neighbor to listen to them and find out about them and find out why they picked that neighborhood to live there, rather than maybe telling them about what they, having it be about the rules of the neighborhood, maybe a little more relational about wanting to know about the person that had moved in and why they chose to live there.
Yeah. We used to do it that way. You know, when my parents built a home from the ground up in Gary, Indiana, where I grew up many, many, many years ago, they had, you know, just a few neighbors around them, but they came to say hello. And a lot of times we don't do that anymore. You know, like you said, like I said, a package was delivered to me, but I never saw the person who might have dropped it off, or if it came on a FedEx. I have no idea, but I really appreciated it. So let's take a look then at the way we live today, the way we plan to live. We're living on top of each other here in the Twin Cities, particularly, right? We have all these condos and all of these apartments and these gigantic high rises. And there is conflict there as well. Right?
Absolutely.
When it comes to neighbors. And their walls are thinner, so they're not being built as well. Do we look at all of these entities that contribute to the challenges that we have? That's why we have HOAs, right? So if you're building a place that is so lightweight where you can put your fist through the wall, you're going to have some conflicts. There's just no doubt about it. You can hear the person flush the toilet. It's, you know, forgive me for being crass, but really that's very real. I know someone who lives in a place like that, brand new, spending like $2,000 a month. Is that where we need to start looking in order to make sure that we have less of these conflicts, is that we need all of the entities involved, though, that plan, you know, whether it's the Metropolitan Council that plans how we live down the road, 20 years down the road, or maybe it's the builders who are not building correctly. Are all of those things contributing to the problem getting worse? Because it is getting worse.
You know, I think accept the things you cannot change and change the things you can. I think for people that are living in higher density housing, I don't know if those are things that they can change about municipalities and ordinances. I think that what they can start with is maybe a little more cultural humility or a little more openness to the neighbor to knock on a door and say, hey, I'm wondering if it would be possible for us to have a little conversation about how we can be good neighbors together. Am I making a lot of noise? Is there noise that you're hearing from my apartment? Is there anything that I'm doing that perhaps is creating some conflicts for you? Because there are a couple of things that are going on that I'd like to have an opportunity to talk to you about.
People are very sensitive today. And I think it has a lot to do with the acceptance of my household is my household. I am going to do everything around my household, and I don't really care about yours. There's really a sense of some of that. And I know HOAs have really played a good role in the sense of solving some of this conflict, because they really do go forward and speak for the homeowners in the community, and they bring people together. Not necessarily. They're not out there trying to tear the community apart. So is it something we should look at, that every neighborhood should have an HOA?
Well, I don't know who governs the neighborhood. In a neighborhood where it's not one property owner, like a neighborhood, like a complex that is owned and the properties, I'm not quite sure how that would work. Who would make the rules and who would enforce them?
They do, and they do. So in California, my sister built a home. And it was in a beautiful area and was so well planned, from churches to schools and all the necessary buildings to make a community. All were built at the same time, from condos to townhomes to apartments to homes, just beautifully planned out. And the HOA had all of these rules. They were able to go to other cities in California to see the successes of a homeowners association, and they really have it down pack, right? So if there's a problem, if someone is making too much noise or screaming, or you've got a neighbor from hell, you go and talk to the association, and the association pulls together the committee, and they decide on what to do about that. Okay. And it's in the rules. If you don't do it, if you don't do what's suggested, then you could literally lose your house. That they could come after you and say, you have to move. You have to get out. Sell the property. Get out. I don't know if I could ever live like that, where someone tells me my house can only be three colors and I can only put these plants in the yard. But there's the pros and cons of that. So is that conflict resolution? Is that a way for us to
I can see how
live
that
better
would
together?
Avoid a lot of conflicts. I could see how that could make solve some had some disputes off before they became a problem. But, you know, I think I like to say we're all cracked vessels, and I'm sure that that other conflicts would arise. So it sounds like a good idea. It could probably solve for some of the big things, but I don't know if it would solve for everything.
I'm sure you know that over North Minneapolis, in some parts of South Minneapolis, there's a lot of rental properties in neighborhoods where there are a lot of homes. And so what does the landlord, what are the laws here in the great state of Minnesota about landlords and the renters that they bring in that could be renters from hell?
We do a lot of landlord-tenant mediations, and it's so important, I think, in a market where affordable housing is at a premium and vacancy rates are so low, that we do everything we can. In fact, we're in Hennepin County Housing Court every week to help families stay housed. But, the non-payment of rent is the number one cause for an eviction in the Twin Cities, and that's the law, that a landlord can evict for non-payment of rent. But what we find is oftentimes there'll be a conflict that was brewing between the landlord and the tenant about something else. It could be about how they use the property. It could be about noise. It could be about perhaps a conflict that tenant is having with another conflict. And then the landlord will use a late rent payment as a reason to file an eviction notice, even though the real cause is a conflict that's been brewing between the landlord and the tenant for many, many weeks or months or years before that. I saw a situation not too long ago where a family, a Latinx family, was having another child, and the landlord thought that that was too many children for that property. And yet the family, in their culture, many children sharing a bedroom was really a norm. So in that mediation, we were able to get both sides to understand that the conflict is they had different expectations around, you know, what was an appropriate number of kids to have in a particular housing unit. And mm-hmm. they were able to come to an agreement on what it needed to look like going forward. But it was based on sort of misperceptions about different people's perspective mm-hmm. on what was okay.
And that's a challenge with being global citizens today, you know, having some of everyone in your neighborhood. We need to build our cultural intelligence. We need mm-hmm. to raise our cultural intelligence. And many of us are not investing in that. It's like, we don't even want to know. You know, I want to know about your culture. You don't need to know about mine. You live across the street and that's that. We'll just keep it that way. But it doesn't work, does it? They end up on your table eventually, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually.
They do.
So if there is a way, if there's something that you can tell us, because every neighborhood, every community is different, is there something that is the common denominator that all of us should do if there is a conflict that we should begin to do? Start where to try to solve it first before we have to get a mediator involved?
You know, I would say the first thing is to we have a thing that we call I statements. If you want to approach your neighbor about a problem or an issue, it's a very simple technique. You talk about how I feel. So I feel frustrated and helpless when you play your music loud at night because I work two jobs and I really need a good night's sleep. So would it be possible for us to think about a plan where the noise level could be acceptable for me and still meet your needs?
Mm-hmm.
It's a I feel when because and here's what I want.
Okay.
You know, it is opening yourself up to say, I have an emotion, I have some humanity around this situation. It's causing me some pain in my life. Here's why it's important to me, and I'd be willing to work with you on some kind of a solution. What can we do together? And I also think it's not letting the problem fester. You talked about people having big houses and they're sort of like their palace. Well, their palace can become their fortress if they have such an adversarial relationship with a neighbor that they avoid them at all costs and try not to see them and plan their day around, you know, coming and going when they're not coming and going. So, you know, the ability to walk across the street or walk across the hall to talk to the neighbor about what's going on and open up that dialogue rather than letting it fester for a long time, because it's only going to get worse if you don't talk about it.
Isn't that the truth? Final question. We know that landlords have a list of renters that are on the list where you should not rent to them. And I know that spread around from time to time. Is there a list of neighbors from hell that renters have? I mean, sorry, not renters, but landlords have, or communities can have, or those that have neighborhood watch? Is there a list like it? Like
you know,
that?
I think that landlords are able to check things like credit scores, and they're able to check things like eviction records, and they're able to check about criminal history. I think our city council is working now on some ordinances to perhaps change that balance
I just read that story in the
MedPost.
Change
that balance a little bit. And, you know, I think there's room for both.
Well, it's a pleasure having you in studio, MJ. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks.
That is MJ Bauer. And again, if you want more information about what she does with Conflict Resolution Center, just go to crcminnesota.org. Again, that's CRC Minnesota, spell it out, .org. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
It is now 8:38 here at CCO. Welcome back.
You have a pass someone or see a van drive by with a logo you don't know what it is, and you wonder, so what do they do? That's what this segment is, for us to find out what exactly do they do. And there's someone sitting in studio. I can't wait to find out exactly what she does. In fact, really, I already know it's about laughter. And her name is Sarah Routman. They say laughter is the best medicine. I really do believe that. And that is what Sarah Routman discovered. After a career in education, she has become a worldwide laugh ambassador. Wonder how that happened. And she built a business where she works with people and companies. Yeah, big companies, on laughing again and teaching, of all things, laughter yoga. And she's joining me right now. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, good evening. I'm so excited to be here. And you'll forgive me if I sometimes have a bout of the giggles in the middle of nothing.
Okay, so have you always giggled your whole life?
I have not always giggled my whole life. In fact, my grandmother used to remind me to keep a sense of humor and look on the bright side of things.
Wow.
And I've always been optimistic and positive. But, you know, sometimes we let stress in. And so I wasn't always laughing.
Is it tough to be expected to laugh all the time?
Now, no, because I practice all the time.
You have to practice.
Oh, you have to practice. Like anything, you have to stretch your muscles, like play an instrument or play a sport. You have to stretch your smile muscles and stretch your laughter, funny bone.
During this time in our nation and in our world, we need this more than ever before,
right?
Oh,
we absolutely do.
So I bet your phone is just ringing off the hook.
Yep. And the truth is that smiling, just this act of smiling, and I know you're smiling with me right now, you're stretching your cheek muscles and you're sending endorphins right to your brain, which already is making you feel better. And when we laugh, we release chemicals in our body that make us less stressed, less anxious, less depressed. We also can help ourselves feel less pain. And just when you make eye contact and smile at someone, you're making a connection. You're saying, I could trust you. I'm inviting you to have a conversation, and your body will not allow you to laugh and be angry at the same time. So as we share laughter, we're actually shedding our inhibitions and breaking down barriers that help connect us to people that we might not know or might not feel comfortable with. And after you share eye contact and laughter with someone, the research indicates that you're much more likely to share honest things about yourself, whether you've laughed with strangers or friends. So what a great way to connect and meet people that are new to you and get more comfortable with them.
What set you on this path?
Well, as I told you, my grandmother told me to keep a sense of humor.
Right.
And in my life, I've been very lucky in a lot of ways. But when I was pregnant with my third daughter and had her, she was born with an immune deficiency. We didn't know it initially, but I found myself in a hospital room in Duke Hospital in North Carolina, and my husband was home with the other girls, and he came to visit on a weekend, and there was a great big poster on the wall. As I told you, I've always been positive and pretty optimistic. Mm-hmm. The poster said, I love you very much. He came to visit, and he sat her, she was 18 months old, on his lap, and he pointed to the poster and said, I love you very much. And as he said you, he tickled her, and she began to laugh and laugh and laugh. And in that moment, I recognized that we weren't in a very good situation. We didn't know what was going to happen with her. It was very serious, and I was living on the bathroom floor of that hospital. But I recognized that that laughter could take us somewhere else, and it was as though she was inviting us to go on a journey with her to play. She was being present, and I knew then that laughter had a special message and a special something. And it wasn't until 10 years later when my older daughter's friend became a laughter yoga leader. She invited me to a session, and that feeling that I got in that session said to me, this is it. This is the moment you've been waiting for. This is how you get to spread this message and teach other people how to find laughter because your body doesn't know the difference between feeling happy and thinking something's funny and laughing just because. And that's the message. When you need it the most, put some laughter in, start with a smile, and you can do amazing things and feel good.
There's so many people that don't know where to begin.
That's right.
So how do you
teach
them?
Okay, so what I discovered when I became a laughter yoga leader was, as you go into a session, often people are awkward. So we start with something called smile-ups that I created. And so what you do is just make a great big smile, try to think of something that makes you feel joyful. And as you smile, those endorphins are heading to your brain.
Right.
And as soon as you make eye contact, you might even start to giggle. You're already breaking down those barriers. And what I discovered is that people, when asked to smile, they could smile because you can smile without feeling too inhibited. And as you're making eye contact, you start to feel a little silly and ridiculous. Which, by the way, is the point. The more playful and silly and ridiculous and childlike we can be, the better. And I found that people were starting to laugh anyway. And as I move into the exercises, so I like to describe laughter yoga as heavy on the laughter, light on the yoga. There are no special positions. We do exercises that are a little bit like theater games, pantomimes, and using your imagination to trigger the laughter. And even if you fake it, eventually in a social setting, I'm going to laugh. And then you're going to start to laugh. And before we know it, what may have started as fake laughter will become real laughter.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the theater realm, because it really is like you're asking us to become actors.
That's right.
It's like set yourself, actors, we think about what we need to do down the road in the piece, in the play. And of course, when it's time to laugh or giggle or whatever, it comes right away.
Right.
And if you train yourself to do it, then you can do it. But how can you do it authentically? How do you know that that smile is really generating those endorphins? If you have something very sad in your brain or something just happened at home that was really awful, and now you're coming to this laughter yoga class to laugh.
So we have two rules when we do laughter yoga. The first one is that we're going to make eye contact, not just with me, but with each other. And the second rule is so important. We ask everyone in the room to please suspend judgment, not just of everybody else, but also importantly of yourself. So don't overthink it and don't think, oh, I shouldn't, or, oh, that's wrong. We're going for a deep belly laugh. So I'm asking you to trust me. I'm also making it okay. It's a safe space. However you show up is okay. So if you laugh with a wild abandon, no one's going to judge you. And if you're not sure what to do and you just laugh, that's okay too. And we're going to applaud you and laugh with you because we're supporting each other in laughter.
Okay, so how many people have come up to you and said, are you kidding me?
Very many people have said that. And actually, I tell them to start smiling. And when we do 10 smile-ups, by the middle of the fifth smile-up, everyone in the room is already starting to giggle. And they are starting to trust me because I said to them, however you show up is okay. And so there has been somebody in the room a whole hour stood next to me the whole time, and he kept passing and he didn't want to participate. And I made it okay. I said, so long as you're not judging us, we're not judging you. We're all here. But I kept my eye on him. He giggled some too, because you can't help it. Laughter and smiling are contagious.
They are like contagious. Yawning. It's just like yawning.
Exactly.
I agree.
And so one of the first exercises after smile-ups is welcome laughter. And I ask everyone to say their name and give a laugh. And as people give their laugh, people giggle because it just stimulates other laughter. And so before you know it, people are just eager to try on that childhood skin again and play. And all I'm doing is asking you to play with me.
Yes. Let's talk about that childhood play, because of course we know that babies are like these heavenly bodies filled with laughter, right? That's just all of that fat and on them. It's just nothing but little pockets of laughter. And so it's released automatically. I love the video that you posted on your website about Stanford University and the speaker.
Oh, I know. That's my favorite one.
Really was an amazing talk for 8 or 9 minutes. And I really encourage people to go to your website, which is seriousgiggles.com.
Which is soon to become laughhealthy.com, but you can find it in both ways right now.
So listening to how it works and that it really is a science to laughter, and that you can consciously prepare yourself to make sure that you laugh enough during the day so those endorphins go in and you feel better about life, about yourself.
Yes. And the thing that you want to keep in mind is an ideal minimum is 15 minutes of deep belly laughs every day. And you're not looking for the ha ha ha. That's okay to get started, but you're really trying to laugh from your diaphragm. And if everybody listening just opens your mouth and say the words ha 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 and try to say it enough times that it really becomes laughter, just do this with me. So what you're doing, it's your body's natural way to exhale more than you inhale, because normally when you're breathing, you're exchanging carbon dioxide for oxygen. But when we laugh, again, I'm going to demonstrate, that was all an exhale. So laughter is your body's natural way to exhale more, which allows for more oxygen to come in. So you're increasing the oxygen flow of your body. And what's interesting is, you would probably think that most laughter comes because something is funny as a response to that. Only 20% of laughter is actually a response to something funny. We tend to laugh if we're nervous, if we feel awkward, and it's actually part of our body's way to balance when we feel uncomfortable. So babies are laughing because sometimes it's they're uncomfortable. We think they're giggling at us, and so we giggle. When we laugh back at them, we're helping them to feel safe, and that's why it continues so nicely.
Very interesting. We got to take a break and pay some bills. When we come back, I want to ask you about what you have these clients. You have a great client list. You have everything from Jewish clients to Christian clients, you name it, schools and corporations and so much more, nonprofits. And I'm curious to know what has been the challenge for you between these different clients. Do you teach the same way for each of those clients, or do you have to tailor make it for that group? And how much research do you do before you go in with what it is that you have to deliver? We're going to take a break. You're listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, and Sarah Routman is in studio with me right now. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:51 here at WCCO. Welcome back to Steele Talking. In studio with me is Sarah Routman, and of course, the name of her business right now is, well, her website is Serious Giggles. It will be called
Laugh Healthy.
Yeah, Laugh Healthy. That's coming up, so you want to stay tuned. When is that transfer over?
Any day now. Find both no matter which way you go right now.
All right. Now, Sarah Routman discovered after a career in education that she has become a worldwide laugh ambassador. What exactly is a laugh ambassador?
Well, I'm a certified laughter yoga leader and teacher, which means I can certify other people to be leaders. I'm certified from the Dr. Madan Kataria School of Laughter. It's Laughter University. He's the founder of Laughter Yoga. He was studying the health benefits of humor in 1995 and eventually discovered that your body doesn't know the difference between laughing on purpose or waiting till something's funny. And because he used some triggers with theater games to help people laugh, because they can't just laugh on command, it's now practiced in over 100 countries around the world.
And it's making a difference.
It absolutely is making a difference. And Dr. Kataria has named me a laughter ambassador because I guess he thought I was doing enough work around the world to be worthy of such a title. I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. How do you do what you do when there is tragedy in your life?
You know, the thing that's so interesting is I've been practicing this for about 12 years now. And what I've discovered is, because if you're on like an actor, you have to just pretend that life is good. Well, that's a little bit like what laughter yoga is about. On my way to a session, I'm practicing smile ups myself to get those endorphins shooting through my brain to make me feel good. And when you practice laughter yoga, you become very present oriented. And so I just leave everything else behind and I'm focusing right now. And it may be on a birthday party, or it may be on these hospice patients who they're feeling challenged, but there's no reason for them to have a bad day. We can even put laughter yoga in dialysis rooms and chemo rooms, because we know that the more positive you feel, the better it is for your own health.
But everyone has to buy in.
That's right. And, you know, you can start with, okay, I'm not really sure I can do this. I'll just listen. And if you just listen and you don't want to participate, before you know it, you're going to feel a little bit better. And then you might decide that you want to participate a little.
Okay. So then let's do an example of how this works.
Okay. So this one is one of my favorites that I made up. It's called I Love Myself Laugh. Mm-hmm. And what I want you to do, if you're listening out there, put your palms face up out in front of you and imagine one of those gorgeous yellow emoji giggles in each hand, and they're giggling. And as they giggle, they bounce. And as they bounce, they multiply. And before you know it, your hands are overflowing with giggles. So you throw up your hands out to the universe. Let all those giggles go. Your hands will be empty. You're going to bring all the love that you find out into the universe into a giant hug and hug yourself really tight with laughter. We're going to do this with laughter. Now, normally we're going to do five of them because I don't want to just survive the day. Four hugs to survive a day, 20 to thrive. I know there are listeners out there who live alone. I also live alone. You have to get your hugs wherever you can.
Right.
So let's try this. Put your palms up and we're just going to giggle. Imagine those little yellow giggles and spread them out there. And bring it in for a great big hug. Ooh. And let's do them real fast, too. Big hug, three. Big hug. I know it's catchy, isn't it? And here comes four. Big hug. And this make this last one count. Number five. Ready? Here we go. Giggle, giggle, giggle. And in between exercises, we're going to do a transition where we spread our fingers wide, where we have 39 pressure points in our hands. We're going to clap five times, pushing air out of our body, and we're going to say, ho, ho, ha, ha, ha.
Okay, wait. So here's the thing for me. If I'm hearing this and you're teaching it to me, right? For me, laughter comes from almost a spiritual place because it comes out of nowhere. When you have that guttural thing, how do you plan for a laugh? It sounds as though we're planning for a laugh.
Right. Well, like I said, it's kind of like theater. You're putting your mind into the intentionality of, okay, I'm imagining these giggles. I'm putting it there. And you're hearing my laughter, and I know that my laughter is going to make you laugh. Now, it may take a couple minutes, and then somebody's going to have a great laugh in the group, and I'm going to say to them later, you're coming with me next time. Because all you need is one person in the group besides me to have a good, genuine, let it go laugh, and then it spreads like wildfire. And sometimes I work really hard because I don't have that person in the room.
Right.
But it can always happen. You just have to let it evolve.
Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I want people to know that this is very real for you. This is your
Absolutely.
Work.
Yes.
This is your soul's work.
Yes.
You're out there doing it, spreading it. You have these clients that have posted pictures on your website. I've seen many pictures in different situations. The question is, what's next for you? How do you help this grow and become even morph into something even bigger? 30 seconds.
The best thing for me to do is just get the word out. My client base runs from individuals to conferences. Conferences are great because you can touch so many people at once. Mm-hmm. I've been a keynote speaker at a medical conference. I've spoken at the National Wellness Conference and the Hospice and Palliative Care Conference. And so conferences are good for me and getting into really any kind of business, because no matter what you're dealing with, you can always use a boost for stress management, team building, staff morale, mm-hmm. and it's always about self-care too.
Okay, if people want to reach out to you and hire you or find out more, where do they go?
The best place for them to go right now is to the website, laughhealthy.com or seriousgiggles.com, and you'll see my email there. And
thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're
going to
take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.